Okay, so it looks like it's time to start now. Rabbi Kalman is sorry he couldn't be here. He's spending some much deserved time with his family at the moment. And so tonight for the Shir on Parshat Bo, we have Rabbi Dr. Yaakov Jaffe with us, zooming in from Brookline, Massachusetts. That's where you're based. I'm not sure if that's where you are right now.
That is where I am right now.
Okay. Where he is the Dean of Judaic Studies at the Maimonides School and also the rabbi of the Maimonides Keilah, which was, of course, founded by the Rav, so a very chash of a pulpit. Also, looking forward to this shiur tonight, especially given his expertise on biblical poetry, which is informed by studies in comparative literature at Columbia University. So take it away.
Okay. Thank you so much for the introduction. And thank you. And also thank you in absentia to Rabbi Kelman for helping me selecting the topic. Today we're going to do something very exciting, something that we don't do every day, and something that maybe some of us haven't really done much before. What we're going to do today is we're going to look at one of the earliest interpretations of the 10 plagues. This week's Parshat Bo features the 10 plagues, and Jews have been talking about the 10 plagues for centuries, since the 10 plagues. Every year at the Seder, we talk about the 10 plagues. But tonight, we're going to talk about one of the earliest interpretations of the 10 plagues. Now, it's not fair for me to even ask you what is the earliest interpretation of the 10 plagues. But if anyone wants to take a guess, you can. And if not, I will, offer the guesses that some of you may have as to what is that amazing text, the first commentary on the 10 plagues. It's earlier than Rashi, earlier than Maimonides, earlier than the Talmud, earlier
Mechilta.
than the Mishnah. The Mechilta is a you. That's true. The Mechilta is a very, very early source, which has a commentary on the Talmud, but this source is even before the Second Temple period. It was in
Tehillim.
the title of your talk.
Tehillim.
Yeah, it was in the title. It's actually in
Tehillim.
Tehillim. Tehillim
Tehillim.
has a commentary on the Ten Plagues. And what's so amazing about it is that we like to think in our minds of a period of Tanakh, the Bible. And then after this period of Tanakh, the Bible, there's a period of commentary significantly later. What we don't always realize is that the Bible, the Tanakh, sometimes composes commentary on itself. Tehillim usually is the Psalms of King David, but occasionally it's a commentary on earlier biblical passages. And we're going to see tonight, one, and if we have time, two, passages from Tehillim, which serve as an early interpretation of the 10 plagues. And as iPad has chatted to everybody in the chat, in the fancy word for this, if you want to impress your friends over Kiddush on Shabbos, it's intertextuality, as the different texts of the Bible are now talking to each other.
You're talking about Perek Kufhei?
I'm going to start with Ayin Chet with 78. There are two chapters, Ayin Chet and Kufhei. I find Ayin Chet more interesting, so we'll start with that one. But we have Kufhei as a, if we have time at the end, we'll look at Kufhei as well. Now, I'm hoping that we can be interactive. So everyone, we're hoping that we can learn this together. And what I'm going to do shortly is screen share with you Psalm 78, or at least the part of Psalm 78, Tehillim Ayin Chet, that talks about the 10 plagues. If you have in your library behind you a book of the Tanakh, and you prefer to, not use my screen share and open up a book, you can feel free to do so. And it's going to be interesting because one of the things we're going to find is that the translation that I found on the internet, which I think is the 1917 Jewish Publication Society translation, might not be the only translation of some of these. So you're welcome to look at your own book. I'm going to screen share for those who don't have a book in front of them. And we're going to get an opportunity to talk together about how Tehillim talks about the 10 plagues. Okay, here it is. And I'm going to start reading from Pasuk Mem Dalet 44, where we start talking about the 10 tribes. 10 plagues. Sorry, we have too many. 12 tribes, 10 plagues. And I'm going to read 5 verses from Mem Dalet 44 through Mem Hechet 48. Vayafoch ledam yeorehem v'nozlehem bal yishtayun. The channels of the Nile were turned to blood, and they couldn't drink the liquids. Everybody raise a finger. Which plague is that? This is the easiest one. Okay, we got that one. First plague. Yishalach bam arov v'yochalem. God sent against the Egyptians an arov. Which plague is arov? Everybody show your fingers. Okay, arov is number 4. What's interesting, by the way, is that this translation that I have translates arov as flies. Does anyone else have any other translation for arov? If you happen to have an English translation with you. Anyone? Swarms of beasts. Yeah, there's actually a debate what the arov was, and some translations write swarm of beasts. This one has flies. I'll take any of them works. One of you has lice, which will become important later on. But let's assume this is the fourth plague, and therefore it's a swarm of animals, which is what I think most of us learned. But it could be insects, it could be flies, it could be something else. Okay. Utsvardeya, Batashri same, and frogs, which destroyed them. Which plague is this one?
Second. Two.
So which ones do we have so far? 1, 2, and 4. Vayitain lechasil yivulam vigiyam la'arbet. He gave their produce to grasshoppers, their labor to locust. That's number 8 from this week's parsha. Yaharog babarad gafnam v'shikmosam b'chanamal. He destroyed their vines with hail, their sycamores with lightning fire.
Barad,
that's 7. Vayisager labarad b'iram u'miknehem larishafim. Okay, we'll stop there. We'll come back to this later. To review, and I'll put it in the chat in case anyone wants to refer to it later. We have seen in this order, plague 1, 4, 2, 8, and 7. So, any thoughts about what is going on here with Tehillim and Tehillim's statement of the plagues?
They're leaving out the ones that didn't get a warning.
Annie, you're like 10 steps ahead. Okay. Annie notices that there are a bunch of plagues that are missing, but Annie noticed that plague number 3 and plague number 6 jump out at her as being missing. Because when we had 1, 2, and 4, 3 was missing, and we had 7 and 8, 6 was missing. And Annie is 10 steps ahead of me. So Annie asks, why are 3 and 6 missing? What are 3 and 6 have in common? And Annie answered that 3 and 6 didn't carry a warning. During the 10 plagues, the first plague, Moshe warns Pharaoh that if you don't listen, there's going to be blood, and Pharaoh doesn't listen, and there's blood. Then Moshe warns Pharaoh there's going to be frogs, Pharaoh doesn't listen, and there are frogs. Then the third maka, which is lice, no warning. Fourth maka, Moshe warns Pharaoh that there's going to be the swarm. Pharaoh doesn't listen. Fifth, warning about pestilence. Pharaoh doesn't listen. Sixth, the boils is no warning. So the psalmist is saying that the plagues without the warnings don't deserve to be mentioned. Well, why? Annie, it was your suggestion, so maybe you can share with us why. I'm not so sure myself. Why would you, just because there's no warning, you don't mention it in the Psalms?
Because they can be interpreted in another way. They have more significance. Or on the other hand, maybe it's not fair to give a plague without a warning. But from what I've read, they could be interpreted in another way.
Yeah. So I like that idea, what you said at the end, about it's not really the same if you give a plague without a warning. Because this chapter of Tehillim is trying to express the fact that God communicates with humanity, and that the plagues are, in a way, a communication with us. And so maybe the plagues without warning don't deserve to be mentioned because they're a little bit different. God doesn't communicate with us. Through them, they just happen. So it's not communication in the same way.
The question is, who are the plagues for? Not only for the Egyptians, but also for us.
Okay, so Chaim saying back that maybe they should be listed because we as Jews still have them in our Torah. We still mention them in the Seder. We know they're from God. So even if the Egyptians, are claiming there's no warning, so it doesn't count, maybe we should count them as well. For me, I'm less interested in the answer. I'm more interested in the observation that the author of Tehillim noticed something when he was reading the Parsha, and he is picking up on that in his commentary. You know, like the first time I learned that the third, sixth, and ninth plague didn't have warnings, I'm like, oh man, did Rashi notice that all by himself? No, this was noticed before the first temple period in the Psalms, that this is the way that there are certain plagues that don't have warnings. It was noticed so many years ago. Okay.
But 5 and 8 are missing also. So that's not convincing that that's why those were omitted.
Okay, so Mel also notices that 5 is missing. 5 and which other one? 5 and 10, right? 1, 2, 3.
10 is there.
5 and 10. So
8.
No, we got 8. 8 is before 7. So
10 is there. 10 is there. Tupsukim after.
Oh, 10 is there? Okay, let's go back. Okay, so we're missing. Okay, so we're missing 5 and 10. So let's go back and maybe we'll find 5 and 10. Because we know the first thing we notice is that 3, 6, and 9 are missing. Let's go back to Psalms and we'll read from there and we'll see if we can find 5 and 10, which maybe are there. Okay, so let me continue, and there are three verses, I'm picking up from where I left off a few minutes ago, three verses I didn't read yet. 49, Yishalach bam charon apo, God sent against the Egyptians his anger, evra, spite, v'za'am, wrath, Vitzara, enmity, mishlachas malchei ra'im, messengers of evil. Or no, I'm sorry, evil messengers. Yifaleis nativ la'apo, but at the same time, God made a path for his anger to cut against the Egyptians. Lo chasach mimaves nafsham, God did not keep them from, spare them from death. V'chayatam la'dever hiskir, and he brought pestilence, dever, against Chayatam.
Fifth.
Everyone on the fingers, Chayatam.
Ladever.
I assume is number 5, right? Look at the English, though. Look at the English. The English in your screen translates Chayatam, I'm highlighting it now, as soul. Does anyone know Hebrew grammar? How would you say they're animals in Hebrew?
If you want to say him. Chayotehim.
So what is
Balei Chayim? If you say Balei Chayim, it should be Chayotehim. Chayot, their Chayot, in one word, is Chayotehim.
Okay, so Ibn Ezra, interestingly, says the fifth makkah is missing because it doesn't say chayotehem, animals. I like to think that the fifth makkah is here because it says pestilence, which is the name of the fifth makkah. So I think this is the fifth makkah, and I would translate chayotehem to be their chayotam as their animals, even though it's not exactly the correct Hebrew. And then 51, the 10th, Vayachol b'chor b'mitzrayim, reshitonim ba'al echam, God killed every firstborn in Egypt. So now I'm going to update my list. I'm going to stop the screen share, and I'm going to type into the chat so everyone can see the list. We got 1, 4, 2, 8, 7, 5, and 10. So we mentioned 7 out of the plagues, and as Annie noticed, the 3 that are missing are 3, 6, and 9, per Abby's interpretation, the plagues that didn't have warnings. If you've never noticed this before, you're welcome on Shabbat when you hear Torah reading to note these are the ones which don't have warnings are left out by the psalmist. Okay. Anyone notice anything else? We talked about 3, 6, and 9 being missing. Anyone notice anything else of interest? Here, when we look at the psalm, the plagues as recounted in Psalm 78.
They're out of order.
Okay, Sima points out a second point, that the plagues are out of order, because we would expect them to be 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 8, 10, and they're not. They're out of order. So what do we make of that fact? Radak is bothered by this idea that the plagues are out of order. And he basically says, this is poetic recounting and not the history. The book of Shemot is telling the history. It's telling the story. When you tell the story the first time, you want to make sure to tell the story in order. But this is a poetic recountment. When you write poetry, it's not always in order. Right? Imagine if you write a poem commemorating the life of a famous person. You won't necessarily go through all the events in their life in order. Or for the sports fans, if you collect the greatest parts of a basketball game, they're not always in order. It's poetry, so the order can be a little bit, not as expected. However, there is something that this lack of order to the plagues that might be able to explain. There's something funny that we do at the Seder that most Ashkenazic authorities say is actually related to Sima's observation that the plagues in Tehillim are out of order. Can anybody think, what do we do at the Seder? I see Ellen is waving, so I guess she knows. What do we do at the Seder to respond to the lack of order in the Psalms? Okay, Gershon, thank you. Beat Ellen to the unmute button. The Netzach Hadash Be'achav. I'm going to share screen now, but now I'm going to share with you the Haggadah Shel Pesach. You might remember it just from memory, so you're welcome to just rely on the screen share. Here we go. So in the Seder every year, we have a list of plagues, which is familiar: blood, frogs, lice, the mixture of wild animals, pestilence, boils, hail, locust, darkness, and the firstborn. And then Rabbi Yehuda gives a mnemonic: Titzach, Adash, Be'achav. And the Ashkenazic commentaries, this goes Rashi, Rashbam, Dasakenemi, Baliatosvos, Chizkuni, many authorities make the same point. They ask, what do you need a mnemonic for? You go to a five-year-old and you ask them, what are the 10 plagues? They can pretty much come up with the 10 plagues. Why do you need a mnemonic for them to remember the 10 plagues? They're so visceral. They're so eye-catching. They're so meaningful. So you don't need a mnemonic. So these Ashkenazic authorities answer, the purpose of mnemonic is not to remember the plagues. is to remember the order of the plagues. Because somebody might get confused and might say that the correct order is the order of Tehillim. How do we remind ourselves that the correct order is the order of Shemot? So every year at the Seder, we say, Tetzach Hadash Be'achav, to remind ourselves that the order of the plagues is the order found in Shemot, in Exodus, and not the order found in Tehillim, in the book of Psalms. So now you got something to say at the Seder, and something to say at this week's Kiddush, if your shul has one. Debbie?
I think it also is to, they're grouped. Each of the three in each group has unique qualities also.
Correct. So the Ashkenazic authorities tend to say the reason why they're grouped into Detzach, Adash, Be'achav is to explain the order. Sephardic authorities tend to give Debbie's answer, which is that there's a thematic connection to the group of plagues, three plagues that prove that God exists, three plagues that prove that God is engaged in the world, and three plagues to prove that God can defy nature. So there are lots of explanations for Netzach Hadash Be'achav, but one of them is that it's a response to our chapter of Tehillim. Okay, so we've talked about two things so far regarding Psalm 78. And just to review in the chat, we talked about the absence of plagues 3, 6, and 9. That's the first thing we talked about. And the second thing we talked about is the order of the plagues, or lack thereof. I'll take Seema's question because Seema raised her hand here. And then we'll see if there's other nuggets that we can mine from Psalm's commentary on the plagues. And I know I spelled thereof wrong in the chat. I apologize. Yes, Seema.
I was just going to comment that we shouldn't be so surprised that the plagues are out of order in Tehillim Ayin Chet, because the whole Tehillim is out of order. You have the stories preceding the list of the plagues. You have Bakayam by Abi Rain, you have Bayam Tir Alehem Man. So clearly that the order is not what is the key in this parak of Tehillim. There's a different message going on here.
Correct. 100%. Seema's very glad that she opened up her own Tehillim and didn't rely on my screen share, because that allowed her to see the entire psalm. And actually, the first half of the psalm is actually material from Parshat Bishalach, the splitting of the sea and the falling of the man. Maybe next week's Parsha Shir can talk about how Psalm 78 responds to Parshat Bishalach. I don't know who's giving next week's Parsha Shir. But that is a very good question about Psalm 78 in general. Why do you start with the splitting of the sea and the man and the slav, the quail that was eaten, and then come with the plagues afterwards? So 100%, poetry is not always in the same order as the events as related in history. So it shouldn't come as so much of a surprise that the plagues in this psalm are not perfectly in order. I was asked by someone on the chat who wrote this particular psalm. Psalm 78 was written by Asaph. Most authorities believe that Asaph is identified with the chief musician of King David. In Divrei Hayamim, we learned that a contemporary of King David was Asaph, that's why I said this was written before the first temple. Rabbi Moshe Cohen Ibn Jekatilla was of the view that Asaph was actually a second temple period figure. And he said it was a different Asaph. And if you hold like Rabbi Moshe Cohen Ibn Jekatilla, it is in the second temple period instead. It happens to be that most of the Psalms of David are personal, talking about King David's own personal moments of crisis and challenge. Asaph's Psalms tend to be national and historical in nature. They're not personal. Asaph didn't have the life of the forsaken, lonely shepherd And then the, you know, king running away from Saul, Asaph was a musician. So they tend to be less personal and more historical. This is one of the Psalms of Asaph.
Rabbi.
Go ahead.
If you look to Psukim, afternoon Aleph, he talks about Pasuk Nudalet, Vayevi'em El Gvul Kocho, Har Ze Kanta Yemino. He already got already to Eretz Israel, and then later on, he goes back about the situation, what happened in the Midbar in the 40 years. So he's all over the place. Not only over the place in the Makot, in the time of Egypt, he's all over the place in the history.
Correct. We should recommend that Torah in Motion should also have a rotating Tehillim class. And when the rotating Tehillim class gets to Psalm 78, the Psalm in general, can be tackled. We're looking to tackle it vis-a-vis the plagues. So, okay. but it's a wonderful read, and these are all great points that Sima and Chaim are making. I want to point out something else in this particular chapter of Tehillim, which will help explain something that we do at the Seder that we maybe never really understood correctly. I'm sharing the screen again. We're going back to Tehillim. And I'm going to highlight here the entire section of the Psalms. And we had in 44 the blood, 45 the arov, the swarm and the frogs, 46 grasshoppers, 47, 48 the hail, 50 dever, the pestilence, 51 makat bechorot. What is sticking out like a sore thumb? It doesn't belong. What is going on with verse 49? We had plagues in verses 44, 45, 46, 47, 48. We had plagues in 50, 51. And then in 49, there's this seemingly unconnected verse, which is not mentioned any specific plague, and instead says, Yishalach bam charon apo, God sends against them his anger, Evra v'zam v'tzara, spite, wrath, and enmity, Mishlachas malachei ra'im, sending messengers who are evil. What is this doing here? Does anyone know the name of the rabbi who was bothered by this pasuk being here?
Yeah, and he brought it to the Agada, and from the Agada he made a lot of calculation.
Let's take a look at the Agada. So after the Makos, this happens in everybody's Seder, right? So you have the Makos, and everyone's all excited. And if there's a kid, they're singing a song about the frogs. And if there's no kid at the Seder, you're not singing the frog song. At least you're talking about what did it feel like to have lice, and was lice so bad? And I had lice once, and I wonder if it was worse in Egypt. Then you have all those conversations, and you're dipping the wine in the grape juice, and everyone has a blast. And then you're finally done with the plagues, and someone says, let's go on with the Haggadah, and you get to the math section. Mm-hmm. And there's the rabbi who says, there are 10 makos, but each maka is a finger, and there are 10 five in a hand is whatever, so 50, whatever. And then you get Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer who say that each maka was like 4 and each maka was like 5. We kind of remember this from the Seder. But how did Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer prove that each maka was 4 or 5? I'm going to screen share. And maybe you remember this for the Seder, but maybe you never asked yourself why, and now you will. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Minayin, how do we know? Shekol makah umukah sheviyah kadosh baruch hu l'mitzrim mitzrayim haita shel arba makot. How do we know that every plague was really 4? Shneamar, this verse, Yishalach bam charon apo, evrad v'zam v'tzara mishlach malchei ra'im, and counts each of these different languages of hate hate, anger, wrath, fury, whatever, into different plagues. And then Rabbi Akiva does the same thing, later on. So every year at the Seder, you read this, and you probably just gloss over this random verse. Did you ever ask at the Seder, why are they quoting a random verse in Psalms to shed light on the plagues? We now realize that they weren't reading a random verse in the Psalms and applying it to the plagues. They were reading the Psalm about the plagues, asked, why did the psalmist insert this verse which doesn't belong? And their solution is that this verse must be telling us something about the plagues. It transforms my Haggadah. Before I realized this, every year I would be like, come on, what does this even mean? Each plague is four, is five, like where does that come from? Now I realize, no, they're trying to explain why this verse was inserted into Psalm 48. And now I understand why. I understand. It now makes perfect sense why these rabbis applied this verse to explain a detail related to the 10 plagues.
What's the explanation? Why is it here?
They're trying to explain why this is here in the chapter of Tehillim. All your life, you've been reading at the Seder, rabbis asking the question, I studied Psalm 48 and I don't understand a pasuk. This is my answer. And you probably never realized that that's what you were reading in the Seder every year.
We were all too busy counting the fives and the fours and the 50 and the 100 and all the kids trying to figure out the math.
Yeah. There's a question in the chat. I still haven't explained why. The rabbis haven't explained why this verse was inserted where it was. And I don't have specifically here between plague 7 and plague 5. I don't have an answer to that question. In the non-existent Torah in motion, Tehillim class to Psalm 78, the unknown teacher teaching that class will answer that question.
I just wanted to say there is a lot of anger throughout the Psalm before and after this. So it makes sense that it's here and not necessarily right there. But also, isn't there a thing, and I don't remember which way it cuts, isn't there a thing about in the Haggadah there's the Dever, but there's also Cherev. And one, there's an explanation that one applies to the Egyptians and one applies to Israel. And is it Dever that applies to Israel? Because then that could kind of, go along with this mention of anger here and then Dever after that.
There is an important debate whether the plagues afflicted the Jews. Rashi explicitly says that none of the plagues affected the Jews. And Ibn Ezra actually says that many of them did. The Ibn Ezra believes that frogs and blood did affect the Jews. But Dever, at least, it's explicit in the verses that that did not affect the Jews. So we know that that didn't affect the Jews. However, Carol's observation does bring us to the last interesting thing in this psalm. I'm going to type in the chat the order of the Makot in case anyone forgot. Again, it was 1, 4, 2, 7, 8, 5, and 10. That was the order. And the treatment of Dever is interesting. If you think about the plagues in threes, which is how we've been thinking about it so far, and it's how Annie, encouraged us to look at it, and the Tzach Hadash Be'achab also encourages us to think about the plagues in threes. Dever is not interesting. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 5 is kind of like hanging out between 4 and 6. It doesn't stand out. However, there's an alternative way to group the plagues. Not in threes, but to group the plagues in fives. Now, if you group the plagues in fives, Dever, pestilence, has a totally different feeling. Because if the 10th Makkah, the 10th plague, is the tremendous, grand plague of the firstborn, and Dever, pestilence, is right across from that, then pestilence is the second to most impressive of the plagues. This psalmist seems to take that view, because by putting pestilence opposite the plague of the firstborn, the psalmist is encouraging us to think about it as being a culmination of sorts. Think about the way the plagues are divided. 2 is opposite 4. What's 2? Frogs, which is a animal, an organism, hopping all around Egypt. What's 4? Wild animals hopping all around Egypt. The psalmist has put 2 and 4 together because they have a common focus.
They're animals.
Then the psalmist puts together 7 and 8. They also have something in common. 7, the hail, as we read at the end of last week's parsha, destroys the crops. And 8, the locust, the beginning of this week's parsha, eats all of the crops that were not eaten by the barad. So the psalmist pairs together 2 and 4 as a unit, pairs together 7 and 8 as a unit, then has our little interlude verse of Yishalach Bam Charon Apo, and then comes back and pairs together 5 and 10. The commentators point out that the only Makkah in which people die is the 10th. And the only other only other Makkah in which mammals die is the 5th, pestilence. The other Makkah, some of them were annoying. They might have affected the food supply or might have caused physical discomfort, but they don't involve death. However, the 5th and the 10th do, and the psalmist pairs them together.
The frogs die.
I'm sorry?
The frogs die.
The frogs did die. That's why I said mammals. Because I think I learned in biology class that a frog is like an amphibian or something. So we care more about mammals than the amphibians. But also, the frogs die at the end of the plague, not like during the plague. You're right, Gershon. You're 100% right. Annie, I see your hand is raised.
What about the Jewish people who died during the plague of darkness so as to save the embarrassment of seeing them die in front of the Egyptians?
I believe in my heart, as you say, that Jews died in the plague of darkness. However, that's not in the text of the Tanakh, that's in the Midrash. So I think that, for the purposes of understanding this psalm, the psalmist would say, I'm only referring to those plagues in which death is mentioned explicitly in the text.
Okay, and we're not that comfortable anyways with the numbers of Jews quoted as dying, or at least I'm not.
Yeah, having a million Jews dying in the plague of darkness is pretty, pretty heavy. Now, this observation about pestilence will also explain something in the Haggadah. So we're going to go back to the Haggadah. Right before the 10 plagues, We're going through the plagues, and we're trying to explain, we're sort of leading up to the 10 plagues. And we start by talking about Makat B'chorot, the plague of the firstborn, in which we write, you know, on that night, God went, here, it's now in blue in the screen, yeah, I went in Egypt, and I went and I killed the firstborn, and I did it, not an angel, I am God, you know, I'm the one who did it. And immediately thereafter, right after we mention the plague of the firstborn, we have
the Dever,
the pestilence. So the author of the Haggadah has chosen to start with the plague of the firstborn, and then right afterwards move into the plague of pestilence. And he seems to also be making the same connection that the psalmist does, that 5 and 10, you know, are sort of more serious or, you know, go together in that way. Okay, there's a question in the chat. Was the plague of darkness actual darkness, or is it depression or deep sorrow? Before the plague of darkness, Moshe hits the sky, which has led me to believe that the darkness is real. Remember also that Egyptians prayed to the sun god, and so there's something very resonant to the idea that right before the final plague, right before Makat B'chorot, we have the sort of sun, a representation of the sun god, sort of turning dark again. So I think that darkness is probably, you know, real darkness based on those pieces.
Rabbi, about the darkness, it's written in the Torah, Vayamesh Choshech. The word Yamesh from the word Mamash. They could have felt the darkness. So it was not just a depression or any other emotional. It was actually physical.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. Debbie, I see your hand, but I want to address a question that was in the chat also. We have a question in the chat animals died during hail. Yes, I stand corrected. Animals did die during hail. It doesn't seem to have been as much, but you're right. I stand corrected. I mean, you could still say that, you know, pestilence, you know, which is this sort of all these animals dropping dead, is more emotionally gripping and more parallel to the plague of the firstborn than hail, in which there's like hail falling and like, bring your animals inside. Come on, there's hail. And yeah, they're going to die if they get hit by the hail. I still feel like it's a little bit different, but I do stand corrected. Thank you for that correction, because that was an error on my part.
The Baal HaGadah maybe brings first Makat B'chorot and then Dever, because in the beginning, when Moshe is being presenting to Bnei Israel, he tells them in the beginning, V'achar kach yishalach, meaning he tells that that's what's going to happen. So I think the Baal HaGadah takes this way, and it starts really the presentation of the Makot with Makat B'chorot.
It is true that Moshe is told about Makat B'chorot before any of the other plagues. It's already in Parshat Shmot that actually we find the idea of Makat B'chorot. Debbie, you've been waiting patiently.
I always feel that after having had 9 makot or 8 makot, when Makat Choshech comes, they must have been too terrified to move, because if you can't see and you everything else has, you know, there have been frogs, there's been this, there's been that. If you can't see what's outside, you don't know what there is. You might be terrified to move. Who knows what's lurking outside? If you can't trust your senses to look, then you're really frozen with fear to step out of your Dalet Amos. That's how I think of the Egyptians at that point. They're traumatized by all that, and they can't trust anything because everything has been turned upside down over this past, you know, X amount of months. So if I were them, I put myself in that position, I would be too afraid to move.
I think that's definitely a part of it, that when it's total darkness and your sun god disappears and you've had all these plagues, you know, like no one's going to want to move around. Okay. We're going to review in the chat the four things that we spoke about, just so that everyone has it in their mind, so that when you go to Kiddush, I know I keep saying when you go to Kiddush, I don't know if anyone has Kiddush anymore, when you talk about the parasha, I'll just write it. The four things that we talked about is the absence of 3, 6, and 9, the lack of order of these plagues. That was number two. Number three was the insertion of the extra verse, which the Haggadah picks up on and uses as proof that each Makkah involved much more than just the typical. And the last is the coupling of, you know, 2 with 4, 7 with 8, and then 9 with 10. We have, Ellen has a question. Yes, Ellen.
Didn't you mean to say 5 with 10?
Now I got to type it again. Thank you. Coupling of 2 with 4, 7 with 8, and 5 with 10. Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay. In the 13 minutes that we have left, we're going to look at Psalm 105. Now, Psalm 105 has another list of the plagues. We're only going to scratch the surface of this list. So consider it a homework of sorts that whatever we don't get to in the time that we have, you can do on your own. But hopefully we've learned methodology to how to go about looking at the Psalms, at the plagues as they appear in the Psalms. So whatever we can talk about in the time that we have, we will. And everything else, you know, there is no end to Torah study. Okay, so I'm going to bring back up the screen share. We're going to take off the Haggadah. And we're going to now move on this to Psalm 105. And here we have again the plagues. Yeah, so let's start. It starts here with 28, and it goes here to 36. Shalach choshech vayachshach v'lo maru et divaro. Interestingly, starts with darkness. You know, we had this whole conversation about how emotionally resonant darkness was, and the decision to start with darkness, is interesting here. Okay, hafachad mimeam ladam vayamod et digatam. That's maka number one. We got blood. Shalach artam tzfardeim b'chadrei malcheihem. Sent the frogs in the king's home. You know, what's interesting about this is that when talking about blood, we mentioned that the fish died. It's like, is that the take-home lesson of the blood? And when we mention the frogs, we talk about how it went in the king's chamber. Is that the take-home lesson? Okay. So 1 and 2. Lamed Aleph 31. Amar ve'avor arov, the swarm came, again, whether that's insects or wild animals. Kinim b'chol gulam. So now we have 3 and 4. Natan gishmehem barad esh la'avot be'artzam. Hail of, with fire. Vayaka gafna mutenatam v'shiberitz gulam. And it destroyed the crops. That's 7. Amar v'yavor be'a v'yelek v'ein mispar. And the locust came, the grasshoppers. Vayachal glizim be'artzam v'yachal priyad matam. And ate the food. Vayachal b'chor be'artzam rishit l'chol onam. And he smote all the firstborns in their land, the first of all of their strength. Anyone have any comments about the plagues as they appear in Psalm 105?
Totally out of order. Again. Only the first 4 together. Beginning starts with Choshech, then you go to 1, 2, 3, 4, and then all over the place.
I have in the Jewish journal, I have a poem where I show that the second plague, the frogs, attacks Pharaoh. It's a direct attack of Pharaoh. And I see Bechadrei Malkehem supports my theory. I hadn't noticed that before, but that's where, because that's an amazing proof. If you go to the website, you'll see my poem, Jewish Journal.
Okay, so Gershon, I'm glad to be able to support your insight. Gershon's suggestion is maybe from this psalm we can learn that we've been misunderstanding the point of the frogs. You know, I said at first that the point of the frogs is that they're annoying and they drive you nuts.
No, maybe the frog. It's like mice fighting. I say it's like mice fighting elephants. Frogs fight the big Tanim, the crocodile. The king is the crocodile.
So, wow. So that's amazing. And then that explains why the psalmist has specifically
Chadrei Malkehem.
Specifically focused on how the frogs impacted the kings. So that's a great observation from Gershon. iPad tops in the chat, another interesting point, that the fig trees were decimated. In the Torah, you know, in last week's Parsha, it mentions the wheat, the barley, the spelt, but doesn't mention fig trees. So that's another detail that we find in Psalms, not in the Torah. I'm going to type into the chat the order of the plagues in Psalm 105. The order is not great. It's not terrible. You know, 9 is sort of bumped up to the beginning. It tells you maybe more about 9 that 9 was moved to the front. But 5 and 6 are missing. Why are 5 and 6 missing?
I was wondering if there's an...
Sima, go ahead.
Sorry. I was wondering if there was a literary allusion with an A to Deber with Velo Maru et Baro.
Oh, very interesting. Let me put that back on the screen. So, okay, so right after darkness, the Lo Maru et Dvaro, you know, they didn't rebel against his word. It's not really clear who the his is in this pasuk, but Sima's suggesting that that is an allusion to pestilence, and then we got it in at number 28, in verse 28.
I actually think there's a literary allusion in Ayin Chet also, in our previous parak of Tehillim, to Choshech, because it says, Lo chasach mimavet nafsham. So I'm wondering if the psalmist is using, as they do often, or we see it often just when we do intertextuality and comparisons in text, that sometimes the word may not be exactly the same, but it can certainly be turned into the same. There were no nekudot in the Torah, so we could read chasach as choshech.
So I hear the point. For me, because 3, 6, and 9 have so much in common, and all three of them were missing, I'm not looking to add darkness to 78, but I am looking to add pestilence to 105 if I can. So I like that explanation.
Rabbi, you mentioned before a division of 5 or 5 each. So if you remove 5, you remove the next to it, 6.
It's kind of like a book or a newspaper where the central folio fell out.
You're folding them and then they fall out.
Yeah. Now, I don't have any great explanations for this. The one that I saw is that every Makkah except for 5 and 6 feature a confrontation between Moshe and Paro. In Makos 1, 2, and 3, the Chartumim, the magicians, come to Moshe after the plague. So there's this confrontation. After Makos 4, after Makos number 4, there's a confrontation, and they ask to Moshe to pray, and 7 also with Barad. So 4 and 7 is a confrontation. Moshe is asked to pray. 8 and 9, there's a confrontation. about whether now the Jews are going to be given permission to leave. So 5 and 6 aren't mentioned because there's no confrontation. Okay, that is an answer. It doesn't really sit so well for me because why is that a reason not to include these two? Because there was no confrontation. So I don't have a great answer, but we have a whole Shabbos to think for a good answer why Makos 5 and 6 are missing.
Does it have anything to do with what the magicians could do? Was it the first time they were showing that the magicians couldn't do it?
Well, it was already the third that the magicians couldn't do it.
And on the third, they could not remove them. And Davins for there, they did it and they removed them. And Kinim, they could not. They did them, but they could not remove them.
Yeah, so I see a lot of parallels. Once you included Kinim, once you're including the third, I would include 5 and 6. Someone types in the chat that 5 and 6 are diseases, and that's why they're not there. But the third is also lice, right? Is also, oh, I guess lice is an insect. Maybe, I don't know. And then Mary has also added to the chat a reason for the possible orders of the Makot, as it says in Tehillim as well. Let's summarize. We learned some details about these two chapters of Tehillim, and hopefully everyone enjoyed doing that. And you have material now for Shabbos. You have material for your Haggadah as well. But I also hope it will encourage you all to be motivated to open up the Tehillim and try to see how Tehillim relates to much of the rest of the Tanakh, or as we dubbed it earlier, this intertextuality. Because the authors of the Tanakh read the same Torah that we did. They had the same Bible. They read the same things when they were in second grade. And the later books of the Tanakh are a response to their experience of reading the earlier books. And it's something that we don't always do because, you know, Ketuvim, we almost rarely, you know, rarely open it. But it's something that I would encourage everyone to do. And hopefully this little taste of it that we had this evening as part of our study of the Parsha will encourage and spark future study of the Psalms for everybody who is here in attendance this evening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. So next week, teaching the Parsha Shir will be Moshe Shulman, Rabbi Moshe Shulman. Tomorrow morning, even though Rabbi Kellerman is away, he will still be teaching his 9 a.m. Shir on the Siddur. And this Sunday is Rabbi Menachem Liebtag's final shiur in his series on the theme of 7 in Tanakh. There will be a week off, and then he'll start a new series after that on Shemot. So looking forward to all those things. Thank you once again, Rabbi Jaffe, for these new insights, of course, that we have for Pesach coming up. And for sharing at the Shabbos table, unfortunately not at Kiddush, but.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for coming. Shabbat Shalom and have a wonderful Parshat Bo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Very inspiring.
Very, very beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rabbi, your number 5 and 10 pairing. I just thought of something, it made me think of something else. That so the 5, the cattle died, but specifically in 10, only the firstborn of the cattle died. So that's another pairing of 5 and 10 to show how specific the power of Hashem is, that just the firstborn of the cattle would die.
Yeah, there's a specificity that normally when you have a cattle death, they all die. Right. And the Jewish cattle did not die in five. And it was like, you know, this sort of, just like in 10, that God was very specific who's punished and who isn't. You know, this one is, both 5 and 10 have that specificity, you know, to them. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah, do have a look at my poem in the Jewish Journal, Rabbi Jaffe.
Which edition of the Jewish Journal?
The current edition. Just go to my name, Jewish Journal, and you'll see it. It's called The New Exegesis of the Plagues in Exodus.
Wow. Okay. I will type it in and I will take a look. Thank you.
And it connects with COVID. The third plague I show predicts COVID.
Wow. Okay, I'm looking forward. Thank you.
Please tell me what you think of it.
Rabbi, do you know that in Tikkun HaKlali, that Rav Nachman from Breslev, the eighth perek that you're supposed to read every day is Kuf Chet.
Mm-hmm. Kuf Chet, what of Kuf Chet?
All Kuf Chet. Perek Kuf Chet is one of the prakim that is from the Tikkun HaKlali to read.
Kuf Chet of Tehillim?
Yeah.
Which one is that?
The Tikkun HaKlali is from every...
No, that I know, but which chapter of Tehillim is Kuf Chet?
Kuf Hei. Kuf
Hei. Oh, Kuf Hei, the one that we just looked
at. Kuf Hei that we just read.
I see, okay. Okay, I hadn't realized.
Yeah. All right, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom to all. Good to see you.
Shabbat Shalom, Yeshkaya. Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you.
Well, that was really good. It was really a Mechaya.
Very good.